If you saw the movie Empire of the Sun, then you have some idea what J.G. Ballard's boyhood was like. Steven Spielberg adapted the movie from Ballard's semi-autobiographical novel about coming of age in a prisoner of war camp during World War II. The camp was just outside Shanghai, where Ballard's father managed a British firm. Until Empire of the Sun, Ballard was best known for his science fiction stories and novels. He never belonged to the Aliens from Space school of science fiction. He has said that science fiction is really about the here and now, and that we are living inside an enormous science fiction novel. Ballard's new novel isn't science fiction. It's called The Day of Creation, and it's set in contemporary Central Africa. I spoke to J.G. Ballard from the NPR Bureau in New York and asked him if he still thinks of himself as a science fiction writer.
Well, strictly speaking, I haven't written any science fiction for quite a long time. Unfortunately, these labels, you know, stick like super glue. And the last science fiction I wrote was back in the 60s, strictly speaking, 20 years ago. But, you know, I don't mind because I've always been proud to be a science fiction writer. I think science fiction is probably, you know, the true literature of the 20th century. And you know, I've never shied away from it, but I, you know, the fact is that there are a lot of people who don't like SF, and the recent novels I've written, like Empire of the Sun, and now this new book, The Day of Creation, are not science fiction in any way, whatever.
In what respect do you think science fiction is the true literature of the 20th century?
Well, it describes change. It's a literature about change and about scientific and technological change. I mean, we're living in a science fiction landscape. I mean, in many ways, I think we're living inside a science fiction novel. The world we inhabit is the creation of the scientific imagination. And the kind of, you know, the so-called mainstream novel, which is just about, you know, Charles and Diana living in, you know, Pasadena or Tunbridge Wells in England and who've got their social problems, isn't really about the world we live in. We live in a world of computers and jet travel, of nuclear weapons. Science fiction at least tries to respond to that world.
But your science fiction, I think, was never the kind of techno science fiction.
No, it wasn't. I mean, I described my SF as the science fiction of inner space, psychological space, is what interested me. I wasn't. There are no alien planets in my fiction. There are no spaceships. There are no sort of galaxies millions of years ahead. It's all set on this planet today, the here and now. I'm interested in the sort of landscape that we actually inhabit. The landscape of high rises and motorways, the modern world of jet travel and computers and above all, the media landscape of the mass magazines, mass newspapers, radio and TV, which this is the air that people breathe.
My guest is writer J.G. Ballard, and his new novel is titled The Day of Creation. Now, your autobiographical novel, Empire of the Sun, was recently made into a movie by Steven Spielberg with a screenplay by Tom Stoppard. You had very extraordinary experiences as a child. You were living in Shanghai and with your parents in a British community and became a prisoner of war in a Japanese camp during World War II. I was surprised to find out that unlike your book and the movie based on your book, you were imprisoned with your parents. In your book, you're separated and you're imprisoned alone.
Yes. I mean, I've never made any secret of that. I mean, Empire of the Sun is a novel.
Right.
It's semi-autobiographical. It's partly based on my own first-hand experiences. And part of it, being a novel, is invented. But there are many points of contact. I mean, I'm the same age as the boy, Jim. I was born in Shanghai like him. I lived in that house, went to that school, had those parents. I was in Shanghai when the Japanese invaded China. I was there in Shanghai when, the morning after Pearl Harbor, they seized Shanghai. And I was interned in the same camp. But, and it's a big difference, my parents were with me. Though I'd say that, I mean, people have said to me, we know it's a novel, but why did you leave your parents out? And I think the reason is that it was psychologically truer to my own experiences to present my my alter ego, as it were, the boy Jim in the book, to present him alone, because I think I was alone. I think a sort of estrangement took place between myself and my parents during the camp years, and the book is truer to the psychology of my own life.
Well, you know, you get the impression of a child who was, you know, fairly repressed, you know, and coming up in a prosperous family, suddenly having to survive on his wits in this camp and becoming very, very resourceful, learning how to steal and trade to get extra food, to get books, to get other items that would be of interest or of value. Did you go through that yourself?
Yes, I did. I mean, a lot of the boys' experiences in Empire of the Sun are taken straight from my own life. I used to run errands for the American merchant seamen who were in the camp and who had a hoard of Reader's Digests, which were, you know, I'd do anything to get hold of those.
What's an example of one of the things you did to get hold of them?
Well, I'd run general errands for them. I mean, things like crawling through the wire and setting up these pheasant traps that I describe in the book. Collecting bits of wood for the little fires that people would light, and general dogs bodying around the place. I wasn't constantly scavenging. I don't want to give that impression, but this was a big camp, 2,000 people, the size of a small town, and it was really a huge slum. And as in all slums, it's the teenage boys who run wild. And, I ran wild.
It must be really something to come of age, to undergo puberty while living in a prisoner of war camp.
Yes, I mean, I wouldn't say that anything wonderful and mysterious happened to me. One ran around with a pack of pretty wild girls at the same time. Yes, it was. I mean, it was a huge nuclear family. I mean, this was the bizarre thing. There were about 300 children, and we all ran wild together. And it's a strange thing to say, but in many ways, I had quite a good time there.
Well, it's certainly the impression you get from the book and the movie, that there were a lot of things that you were, a lot of freedom that you had in your own way, because anything went. Even though you were prisoners.
Well, we were out of control of our parents. This is the big thing. I mean, in an ordinary family, the parents have a certain amount of leverage on their kids. They, you know, there are pocket money, there are treats, bits of candy or presents. You know, the parents can say, "Well, what do you want for Christmas?" And this helps to maintain their authority over their children. Now, in our camp, there were no treats. There was no candy. There were no Christmas presents. The food ration, such as it was delivered once a day, and the parents did nothing to provide for their children in that sense. Though, of course, many parents starve themselves to feed their children. I don't want to give the impression that the children were totally on their own. They weren't. But there weren't those levers to pull. So particularly the teenage boys, like myself, did run wild and got up to amazing pranks when I look back. I mean, all this climbing through the wire.
That's pretty dangerous stuff, really. I mean, if a guard finds you, it's all over, right?
Well, yes. I mean, I look back on the things I did. And having brought up three children of my own in a very, very quiet and safe English suburb, I'm amazed at the things we used to do. Luckily, I came through.
A few minutes ago, you were talking about the media landscape and how one of the things that amazes you about the 20th century is this just an incredible amount of media, how everything gets turned into media. How did you feel when you knew that Empire of the Sun was going to become a movie, directed by Steven Spielberg? Did that please you, or Were you concerned about it?
I was absolutely stunned. I could hardly believe it. I mean, you know, it was like somebody tapping you on the shoulder and saying, you know, you're going to be the president of the United States. It was. I mean, and to have the greatest living filmmaker, Steven Spielberg, make a movie of your novel is, you know, beyond any writer's dream. And particularly, of course, I mean, the curious thing is that in our different ways, Steven Spielberg and myself had a very similar background. I mean, most of his early films were in the science fiction field, and a lot of my early career as a writer was in science fiction. So, I mean, I'd seen his films, and I admired them tremendously, in particular Close Encounters, which is very near to my kind of science fiction, in fact. So that I already knew how his imagination worked, and I had complete confidence in him. And then when I met him, I was very impressed. I mean, he was nothing like the picture that I'd read about. I mean, he was a very serious, thoughtful, strong-minded man. He talked to me at some length about how he planned to shoot certain quite difficult scenes in the book. And he never showed any signs of wanting to cut corners or sentimentalize or take the easy way out. I mean, he confronted all the difficult scenes head on. And within about 3 minutes of meeting him, I knew the film was in the best possible hands.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you one more thing about the younger part of your life. When you got out of the prisoner of war camp, in which you explained your parents basically had no control over you and you ran wild with the rest of the kids and the teenagers, when you went back to England and you started going to school in England, was it possible for any of the adults to discipline you after that? Did you have any, you know, respect for authority figures like parents and teachers afterwards?
Not much, no. No, to be honest, I came to England, you see, for the first time in 1946 at the age of nearly 16 and went to a British boarding school, which was rather like a camp, rather like a prison camp in many ways. I mean, rather like the camp I'd been in, only, you know, to be honest, the food was even worse. And I found it weird and very, very strange. I found England very strange. I wasn't prepared for it. I mean, I'd come from a very hot landscape of rice paddies and, you know, monsoons and summer floods. And I arrived at this dark grey northern country with a light. I mean, it seemed to be sort of, it always seemed to be early evening and it always seemed to be raining. And everybody seemed, I mean, England was exhausted by the war. The country was, you know, physically half destroyed by the German bombing. And I felt a stranger there and still do in many respects. It was a very dark, closed, sort of, you know, repressed kind of world. And going to school there and then to university was all very mysterious. It took a long, the English class system was so complicated, I couldn't understand it. Still don't in many ways. It was a difficult time, but I mean, I wasn't unhappy, but it was like sort of, you know, somebody from, say, you know, a young American going to live in, you know, Japan, let's say, in the 1930s. You know, you're an outsider. There's no hope of understanding the complicated social relationships and all the little rituals and all the rest of it. It takes years to...
But you stayed. It's not like you moved someplace else.
Well, you see, in 1949, my father stayed on in Shanghai after the war. But in 1949, the communists took over the whole of China. And in fact, my father was caught by the communists in Shanghai. And he was there for about a year until he was finally able to get out. And I knew by 1949 that I would never go back to China, that I had to make my home in England.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got married and had children. And I always dreamed of going abroad. Still do. But, you know, inertia takes over. And I am English. I mean, I can't pretend that I'm not.
Right. Well, I want to talk with you more about your life and your writing, but first we're going to take a short break. My guest is writer J.G. Ballard, and his books include Empire of the Sun, a semi-autobiographical novel that Steven Spielberg made into a movie very recently. His new novel is titled The Day of Creation. This is Fresh Air. Writer J.G. Ballard is my guest. There's a book of yours that I really must ask you about. This is a novel that you wrote, I think it was 1973, called Crash. And the book kind of was about someone who was almost erotically obsessed with car crashes and with the wounds inflicted by car crashes. And this character has fantasies of blood and mucus and sperm mingling on the dashboard of a car after a crash. It's a very upsetting book. I would love to know what was on your mind when you wrote this.
Something pretty nasty, I think, if I look back. But it was a serious novel. I mean, it wasn't just a sensational horror story. I mean, I was very conscious in the 70s of the way in which what I call the media landscape of particularly, you know, TV and mass advertising was beginning to, you know, create the world that we inhabited. And it seemed to me that the sort of this TV landscape we all live in, or the media landscape we all live in, is hungry for sensation. And we saw then the way in which violence was beginning to be, beginning to take the sort of place that sex had occupied up until, say, the 60s. Then attitudes towards sex liberalized. And people needed a new thrill. And one began to see, I mean, movies got a lot more violent. Television itself began to show endless scenes of, you know, Civil War newsreels from the Congo and Bangladesh, and then, of course, Vietnam. Very, very graphic scenes of violence were shown, but neutralized by the TV screen. I mean, people saw incredible horrors on their living room screens while they were eating their suppers. But they weren't touched by the violence. And it seemed to me that I wanted to look at the way that sort of violence was beginning to enter into people's imaginations. And Crash took an extreme example of this, because car crashes, of course, in movies and so on, play a key role. So I try to be honest about it and let my own imagination rip.
Well, I think I read that after you wrote Crash, that you were in a car crash yourself, and in fact one in which your car rolled over a couple of times. Is that right?
Yeah, that was a sort of extreme case of nature imitating art.
Well, did your book about this person who had eroticized car crashes affect the way you experienced your car crash at all? I'm not saying that you got into it, or but I mean, you must have thought about what it meant that you'd written this book. You'd spent all this time seeing things through the eyes of the character, and then you were in this terrible car crash yourself.
Yes, and I often thought that if I died in the car crash, people would have said, "Ah, yes, Ballard was finding, sort of the ultimate sex death that he'd been writing and dreaming about." Actually, by a miracle, I wasn't hurt at all. The car rolled over on a divided carriageway and obliterated a whole lot of street lamps and sign indicators. The roof was crushed down, and I couldn't get out. Actually, it was a miracle that it didn't burst into flames. Because people were running around the car, rocking it and shouting, "Well, petrol, petrol, gasoline, gasoline." Some guardian angel kept watch over me that evening. But I mean, when one writes a novel, one's you know, one's working in with metaphors, with the materials of the imagination. And Crash is a kind of extreme metaphor to deal with an extreme possibility.
But, you know, we have this concept of sin, that some things are even sinful to think about, and you'll get punished even for the thought, right? And I bet that went through some people's minds, and perhaps even yours?
Yes, it did. I mean, I spent about 2.5 years writing Crash, and it was like a calculated psychopathic act made. I mean, it was a great moral challenge to me, and made all the more pointed by the fact that I was bringing up, I'm a widower, and I was bringing up my 3 children myself, and they were, you know, young children crossing the road every day. I couldn't help but think that, you know, life could have played a very cruel trick on me, or taught me a very cruel lesson, and still could, of course. But, you know, when in the realm of the imagination, one must be honest. I mean, it would have been very easy to have written a conventional little morality tale proving that, you know, violence is bad for you and one should do a good turn every day. But I was, you know, going back to what I was saying about the way in which violence and sensation is the sort of lifeblood of the mass media. I felt I had to be true to the particular idea that I'd got by the tale.
My guest is writer J.G. Ballard, and his best-known recent book is Empire of the Sun, upon which the Steven Spielberg movie was based. His new novel is titled The Day of Creation, and I'd like to talk with you about this new novel. The novel is set in Central Africa. It's about a doctor who works for a World Health Organization clinic, and he really wants to discover a river, because this area really needs water. And a river does form, but then he becomes as obsessed with stopping the river as he had been with creating a river. Do you see this as a parable?
Yes, I think it's a parable of the way people do behave in life. People do get jealous of their own creations. They get jealous of the success of their children, sadly, and the success of their wives and husbands. People are very ambiguous about, you know, their own creations. I mean, we've all known people who've started successful businesses, say, and then when it comes time to retire, you see them sort of half-consciously trying to make certain that the business fails when they are gone. People are very ambiguous about success and about about things they've created, even if it's just a small garden or a little business, or even a major company. And my book is in a sense a fable about the way in which, you know, we can become obsessed with the things we've created, develop delusions of grandeur about them, and then, you know, all those kind of ambiguities that are wrapped up inside us come out.
Well, I want to get back also to your interest in how the media has taken over. There's a television documentary maker who's following this doctor around, and one of the characters comments in the book, sooner or later, everything gets turned into television. You don't like TV documentaries very much, do you?
Well, I'm thinking, of course, primarily of the sort of wildlife documentaries you see on British TV, because that's what I watch most of the time. So I can't speak for American TV. But
we see a lot of those, by the way. They're exported.
Yeah, I've got a terrible feeling they are. And they're helping to sort of rot the moral fabric of the rest of the world, because what they present is a sort of sentimentalized view of nature. They want nature, you know, they represent nature as a sort of bushy-tailed mammal that lies down on your hearth rug and puts its paws in the air. Nature isn't like that. Nature is extremely cruel. You know, Homo sapiens has won his intelligence from an extremely hostile environment. And these wildlife documentaries, and it's not just those, it's all these science documentaries, and I would say in many respects, the TV medium itself presents this sentimentalized and romanticized view of reality with all the sharp edges rounded off, satisfying kind of, you know, our sort of most, you know, romantic notions of what life is about. And in a sense, getting between us and reality. And this is the problem faced by the doctor hero of the Day of Creation. He creates this extraordinary river in the middle of a desert, and then finds that this documentary maker with his TV unit has pounced on him and is beginning to sort of, you know, see it in his own sentimental terms. And I mean, I asked the question in the book, really, sort of, is a sort of simple creative act possible today? Can you do anything without the mass media immediately descending on you and imposing their own kinds of their own fantasies on yours? And you know, my character is constantly trying to escape from this TV man who sort of sits on his shoulders, as it were, you know, like Sinbad with the old man of the sea.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your work and your ideas and your life. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
J.G. Ballard has been my guest, and he's a writer who started off writing science fiction. His recent books include Empire of the Sun, which is a semi-autobiographical story of his coming of age in a prisoner of war camp in Shanghai, a Japanese prisoner of war camp. Steven Spielberg made that into a movie. Ballard's new novel, The Day of Creation, has just been published by Farrar, Straus, Giroux. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.